This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. There's been a lot of talk in the New Hampshire legislature this year about juicing up our economy. Not that the state's economic health is terrible, with an unemployment rate at just 3.8%, almost 2 percentage points below the national average. Still in the halls of the State House and among the state's economic leaders, there's a nagging concern about stagnation. We're growing, but not by much. And so debates abound over what might provide the economic equivalent of a shot of espresso. Some say reducing business taxes is key. Others say our energy policies need a reboot, while still others argue for more public investments like education and health care. Today in The Exchange, we ask the question, how is the New Hampshire economy doing? What do you think from your own perspective, your own job, your own household, your own business? What do you think might give the economy a little more lift? Let's get your thoughts in on this. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Jeff Feingold's here, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. And Jeff, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good seeing you, Laura.
Also with us, Dennis DeLay, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and New Hampshire Forecast Manager for the New England Economic Partnership. Dennis, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good morning, Laura. Nice to see you again.
Also with us, Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic consulting firm in Laconia. And Russ, thank you for taking time out. We appreciate it.
It's very good to be here. Thanks, Laura.
Well, all of you, I want to start out by asking about the national economy, because there was a lot of attention last week to the government's first quarter growth rate released on Friday. Russ Tebow, negative 0.7%. And the Washington Post headline summed it up. It said, "Why don't Americans feel better about the economy?" And let me just share with you guys a little bit more about what they said, because they had a great summary. If there was any time for American consumers to feel good, it would be this moment. Job growth is brisk, paychecks are finally nudging up, and a surprise drop in gas prices has given the average household an extra $700 a year. But, again, this is the Post, 6 years after the end of the Great Recession, Americans are startlingly anxious about their economic prospects. They're sitting on their money in a way that suggests that the consumer psychology may have fundamentally changed, with people less willing to spend than they were during other periods of economic prosperity. I thought that was really interesting, guys. And I'll throw this, I think, to you first, Dennis. Why don't Americans feel better about the economy?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are happening that are sort of underneath the surface. One is the housing market, and we'll probably talk more about that as time goes on. Russ and I had done a study a couple of years ago for New Hampshire Housing Finance Authority, where we were looking at some of the underlying purchase decision issues in the housing market. And what we found out is there are a lot of barriers to people buying new houses for the so-called millennials, the people, the first-time home buyers. Credit is a lot more tight than it used to be.
You have to jump through more hoops to get that house?
You have to jump through more hoops. There's something called a qualifying mortgage right now, which essentially says you can't have a higher than 43% debt-to-income ratio, and that's a real high hurdle. It may not sound that high, but it's a very high hurdle for young people, especially fresh out of college with a lot of student debt. And then for people my age, the baby boomers, if we're underwater in our mortgages because we borrowed a lot against our homes when prices were going up, then it's going to be really hard for us to move around or move to another house. So, given the affordability of housing right now, as the Washington Post was saying, this should be a great time for housing, but there are substantial barriers in the way for people participating in that.
And when people are buying houses, Russ, and we've talked about this 100 yeah. times, they're also buying carpets and couches and maybe hiring a contractor to do a little work and so forth.
Yeah, it's hard to have a good economy without a good housing market. They kind of go hand in hand. And I think that sometimes I think of this as a whack-a-mole economy, you know, that game where you hit the mole. It seems like we get one issue behind us and another one pops up to make us all feel bad. The issue that has gone well for us recently is job growth. As you pointed out, our unemployment rate in New Hampshire is 3.8%. Nationally, it's under 6%. Job growth nationally is average 250,000 jobs a month.
I mean, that's fantastic,
these
right?
These are all
I mean,
good figures.
People
Inflation
in Europe would love to
low.
Have those rates, right? Yeah. 25% unemployment in Spain.
But I think that part of the issue that people don't feel better, despite a lot of good numbers, is this still remains to be the longest downturn since the Great Depression. And job growth is good, but job quality nationally, and I think definitely here in New Hampshire, I did some numbers, looked at New Hampshire's job growth, and something like 90% of the jobs we've added have been in sectors of the economy that pay average or below average wages, only about 10% in sectors that pay above average wages. So while the numbers look good, it's taken a long time to get here, and there's another mole that keeps popping up every week that we have to slam down. And I think right now, this, as you pointed out, the national economy shrunk during the first quarter, partly because of weather, partly because of the strong dollar. It's done that three times in the last 4 years, so it's probably nothing to be alarmed about, but still it shows that the recovery is not well-grounded. It wouldn't take much to screw it up, and I think the average person knows that.
Wow. Okay, yeah, Jeff.
I was just going to add something to what Russ said, is that not just the quality of jobs, but also the amount of hours people are working. Because a lot of companies are, some large retailers in this particular, are becoming infamous for this like just-in-time staffing where mm-hmm. they basically tell you what hours you're going to work the day before. And it's, they end up not being a full-time job. You know, so many of them blame, the Affordable Care Act, saying they didn't want to have to reach the limit of 30 hours. But there's also just something about the nature of, especially these giant retailers. They have a very malleable workforce, and they just kind of are cutting down the hours or limiting the hours of employees. So you count it as employed, but how much money are you actually making?
That's tough. So you got a job, but the wages are okay, as Russ says, and the hours, Jeff, are not certain.
Yeah, so how can you be optimistic about the economy when you're in a situation like that?
So should I buy that new dishwasher? Yeah. Maybe not. I might not have enough hours next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gentlemen, let's take some calls, and then I have a ton more questions for all of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Give us your own perspective on the New Hampshire economy. How does it look from your own vantage point? 1-800-892-6477. And let's go to Nottingham first. Steve is on the air. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Good morning, Laura. I actually want to quibble and take exception to your opening remark that the number of elderly or senior citizens, which I am, are becoming a burden or a liability to New Hampshire. And I'm enraged. I am an asset to New Hampshire. I contribute. I make money. I volunteer. And I want to, senior citizens in rich New Hampshire are not a liability. That's my point.
Well, Steve, I'm really glad that you called. And he's referring to something we played at 9 o'clock, which we call our billboard, where we did mention, and this is up your alley, Dennis, mm-hmm. The fact that New Hampshire's aging demographic is often called an economic drag on the state. And Steve is saying, wait a minute, I'm not an economic drag. I'm contributing. I'm glad you raised that, Steve, because we do need to talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think we're continuing to do a lot of work looking at aging in New Hampshire, and we're actually starting another project with the Endowment for Health, looking at all of the aspects of that, how the aging of the population affects the economy, how it's going to affect workforce demand, because we're having a number of occupations, particularly manufacturing, where the average age of the workforce is closer to 50. So we're talking about a lot of people that are probably going to be retiring from those jobs fairly soon. And it's probably going to have implications for local government finance as well, because if you have more people that are older that are owning homes in the area, that's going to affect the revenue picture for not only the state but also for the localities as well.
I just say, Steve, in response to Steve's point, it's not so much that our senior population, of which I'm a part, is a problem. I think the problem is more at the other end of the age spectrum, that
right.
we don't have enough young people coming
so you need
in
it all.
To refresh the labor force, to refresh the housing market. So it's not that we have really so much, too many elderly. It's that we don't have enough 20-somethings and 30-somethings to refresh the labor force and the housing market.
Mm-hmm. You can kind of see, though, Jeff, why Steve, well, he feels a little insulted by this, because you do hear it a lot. Aging state, economic drag.
Yeah,
are we
absolutely.
Exaggerating this?
No, actually, we're not, because the state is getting older only because we have this very uncomfortable situation in New Hampshire where a lot of the young people decide they don't want to live and work here. That's why we have things like Stay, Work, Play and other efforts to keep young people in the state. And, you know, in some ways they work, but in other ways they just haven't worked. And we end up seeing the economic results of this.
Yep.
And, I'm not just blaming it all on these people who don't want to stay in New Hampshire, but it's a long-term effect of this is hurting the economy.
Yeah, I think there's a chicken and egg problem, too. We just finished up last week, or are in the process of finishing up, some work we're doing for the Manchester Development Corporation looking at post-secondary education institutions in the Manchester area. And we did a couple of focus groups and also looked at some research that Stay, Work, Play did. Students that I talk to, a lot of them do want to stay here, but they're concerned about getting jobs and getting jobs at a salary that they can afford to live in. So it's, we want to keep people here, but the people that are here, the college students that are graduating, are looking at the New Hampshire economy and saying, this really isn't growing as fast as I'd like. I think I may try someplace else.
Even with that 3.8% unemployment? Still, that looks pretty good.
Still, that looks pretty good, but I think it's the job growth that's the issue. There was another study done and released last week by the Pew Center on the States, which I think ranked New Hampshire in the bottom 10 states in
terms you reported
of
on
economic
that.
Growth. Yeah, I think you talked about it last Friday.
Yeah, and that's really very discomforting. But the other thing is that you have to mention about the young people is that not only can they not find the jobs, but also even if they find a job, it's difficult to find affordable housing. As Dennis mentioned at the very beginning, not only are they saddled with this really burdensome college debt. New Hampshire students have the highest college debt in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
But then they try to find a house that they can afford if they qualify for it. And where can you it's not the easiest thing in the world. It really isn't.
Okay, lots more to talk about after a short break, including some recent numbers, Dennis, that I'll ask you about, showing that there was some population growth in New Hampshire, some of it coming from immigrants from other countries, highly educated, highly skilled immigrants. We'll talk about that after a short break. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's an economic check-in for New Hampshire. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We'd love to hear your own perspective. How do you think the New Hampshire economy is doing, whether it's your own business, your own work situation, your own household? What do you think might give the economy a little more of a boost? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests in studio who watch the economy closely. Jeff Feingold with New Hampshire Business Review, Russ Tebow, President of Applied Economic Research, and Dennis DeLay, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And gentlemen, right back to our listeners, and Tracy's in Peterborough. Hi, Tracy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks to you and your guests.
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
I'm from Peterborough, where there are 53% of our residents who actually work out of state, which I find pretty remarkable. And I'd like to offer two observations or suggestions to your guests of ways to help folks who are underemployed like me. One would be to do a better job of having a universal job application in the state of New Hampshire. It's very fragmented for employees and employers to have to input their job description or their resume on a myriad of different career websites. And we should invest in a site like nhjobs.com to make it easier for job seekers and employees. The second recommendation that I would have is that we expand our community college system to have more satellite community colleges, including towns like Peterborough. I think community college education has to be not only affordable, but accessible. So I'd appreciate the input from your guests, and thanks for taking my call.
Tracy, if I could ask you a quick question. So tell us about your own underemployment.
Yes.
What does that mean?
My wife and I are currently part-time employees, and part of that is out of necessity of caring for aging parents, as well as trying to be there for our kids who are pursuing their own college and career ambitions. So we put our house on the market in order to be more flexible in being available for our folks, and if necessary, to take jobs out of state if that's what it takes.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for calling in, Tracy. Do you want to jump in on that first, Rusty Bell?
Yeah, I think that Tracy points to something that, if, as you noted, our unemployment rate in New Hampshire is 3.8%, very low. But if you do factor in the underemployed, people that are dropped out of the labor force because they don't feel there's a good job for them, you get around 9% in the third quarter last year. So there's a substantial part of the state's labor force that's just like Tracy, that either by choice and more often by necessity, can't get a full-time job.
Okay, so say that again, because that's an important point. So our unemployment rate is 3.8%, but if we included people like Tracy who would like to have a full-time job, it would be?
Or dropped out of the labor force because they can't find one, it'd be closer to 9%. In the third quarter last year, it was over 9%, including the various measures of underemployment. So I think that's the big issue. That's the when I talked about whack-a-mole, that's the thing that's sticking up right now is job quality and a substantial number of people that are working at jobs that they're, in effect, overqualified for or working at jobs that are part-time but they wish they were full-time.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I just want to say something because Tracy mentioned all the people in Peterborough and as many others in New Hampshire who work in other states, and for the most part, that other states is Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And in that story I had on the website last week about the pretty, you know, unimpressive job growth of in New Hampshire since the lowest point of the recession. It was interesting to note that Massachusetts had a pretty substantial job growth in that time, almost 9%. And as us sitting at the table know, there's always been this effect of the Massachusetts economy affecting in a very positive way the New Hampshire economy. New Hampshire's has benefited for decades from the strength of the Massachusetts economy, but for some reason we're just not feeling that this time around, at least at this point. And that's something that I don't know if we've discussed. You know, I haven't really heard that discussed very much in the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's interesting, Jeff, and you're right. That has been an economic help, right? Dennis DeLay, people get good jobs in Mass. They live in New Hampshire. They can afford to go out to eat more often.
Right. We had done a show, I think, on that a couple of months ago, and there's close to 100,000 people in the New Hampshire labor force that have holding jobs in Massachusetts, and that's according to the Massachusetts Department of Revenue income tax records that say that there's about that many people that are resident in New Hampshire that are paying a Massachusetts income tax. It varies from place to place. In places like Peterborough that are close to the Massachusetts border, I think the 50% number that Tracy was talking about is probably about right. It's as high as 70% in places on the seacoast and in Hillsborough County. One of the advantages of that, though, is, as you were pointing out, Laura, is that wages paid in Massachusetts are generally higher than the wages paid in New Hampshire's. And even though you were paying a Massachusetts income tax on that wage, with so many people working there, you have to think that it's worth it for them to not only do the commute but also pay the Massachusetts income tax in order to make more than they probably could make in New Hampshire at a similar job.
Yeah, Russ.
The New Hampshire Employment Security Commission has done an employment projection by sub-area in the state. And over half of the job growth that's expected during the decade ahead of us is going to be in Manchester region and the Seacoast region. And the reason for that is, I think, what Dennis and Jeff have pointed out, which is that a lot of the that part of the state can interact with Massachusetts. And the flow is both ways. A lot of New Hampshire workers work in Massachusetts. A lot of New Hampshire residents work in Massachusetts. But at the same time, there's a lot of commuting back from Massachusetts to jobs in New Hampshire. What I'm getting at here is that if you're Concord or North, this whole Massachusetts impact is minimal. And therefore, it's a much more difficult job environment north of Manchester and out of the seacoast. The Upper Valley does well, too, but the numbers are smaller. Yeah, over half of the job growth is going to be in the metropolitan Manchester area.
Again, we've been talking about the 3.8% unemployment rate overall in New Hampshire. It does vary quite a bit by region. Mm-hmm. Coos County, the unemployment rate's about 6%. And again, that doesn't include the kind of things Russ was just talking about, the underemployed and the people who are working part-time that like to be full-time, the people that have dropped out of the labor force. The unemployment rate is as low as 3.2% in Grafton County and in Stratford County. So
3.2%.
3.2%. So you have a lot of variation through New Hampshire. Unemployment rates tend to be higher in the north, tend to be lower in the south.
Well, and you've got the Dartmouth College and the medical center effect.
Especially
in
the medical
area.
Education kind of things, yes.
All right. Well, Tracy, thank you again for calling in. And let's hear from you again. As we look at the economy, we'd love to get your perspective from your own household, your own job, your own business. Is your business sector booming? Is it slowing down? Are you employed but underemployed like Tracy, or do you have more work than you know what to do with? Again, 1-800-892-6477. We'd also like your thoughts on what you think might lift our economy a little bit more. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. From one of those booming areas that you guys talked about, Guy is on the line. Guy's calling in from Portsmouth. Hi, Guy. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
How are you? And I think your guest hitting the nail right on the head. I just like to add a few things. I own a few properties here in New Hampshire, and I own a few businesses, and I own them throughout the United States. I own one here in Portsmouth, one in Newburyport, Mass., and one in North Carolina. And I've had the opportunity to travel the world, so I've seen quite a bit of influx of people. Through my own business, I see a lot of young people come and go. And I can tell you from what I gather and from what information they tell me is it's very difficult to make it here in New Hampshire. If you are a property owner here, the taxes are extremely high. I mean, if you have not seen your tax bill, sometimes it can be, you know, discouraging for any property owner, even a first-time buyer. I mean, you know, just sometimes your taxes are just as much as your mortgage payment. The other portion of this is if you can't get a job up here in New Hampshire that pays well, nobody has any incentive to buy a house and really, you know, struggle with that financial position. It's a little bit easier, I would say, even more easier to make it in other areas. And I think when you see people graduate from college here, they just don't stick around. There's no incentive to stick around. Properties are extremely expensive, and there's not that big paying jobs. It's a lot easier making it, you know, out of state.
Wow, so good. Yeah, it's good to hear from you. Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
So mostly about the taxes. Is that what you're...
Well, I would say, you know, that's a huge piece of it. You
property know, taxes?
The property tax, the other piece is that, you know, when you do have a business here, like I own a business, I own property, I mean, the power utilities here are some of the highest in the nation. So when you combination all these factors in, and somebody's graduating at the age of 25, say 26, and you'd have to have a serious job here to really, you know, even an apartment in the seacoast is what, $1,000, $1,200 for one bedroom in the seacoast. It's quite expensive here. It's not that that we live in a state that's, you know, mediocre where you could, you know, make it and have money at the end of the month to have incentive to save.
Well, guys,
it's very expensive here for younger people to make it. And I deal with a lot of big businesses in the area. I teach a lot of high executive CEOs, and you know, they're on the same page. So it's very difficult to make it here, I think, you know, if you're not already been established. I think people that have made it here and bought property here 20, 25 years ago, and they are somewhat established, or even, you know, 15 years
they're doing
ago,
fine. Yeah. Well, these are great points, and we should definitely follow up on that. Thank you so much for calling in, guys. So, energy costs.
New England is an energy island. unfortunately. And, you know, the reason that we are in have had big increases in electric utility prices and natural gas prices the last two winters is simply because we don't have enough access and pipeline infrastructure to get natural gas into New England. And, you know, that's a New Hampshire problem. It's also a Massachusetts problem. It's a Maine problem. It's to some extent a Vermont problem as well. Our group, the New England Economic Partnership, is holding a conference tomorrow down in Boston to talk through a lot of these issues. But, you know, I think it's really difficult to figure out which, if any, of several possible solutions is going to be the best solution. Is it more conservation? Is it more energy efficiency? Is it restructuring the electric utility system, which is happening right now? Eversource and New Hampshire is selling its power plants. Is it more gas pipeline capacity? I mean, it's another one of these moles that Russ was talking
that's our
about.
Theme for the hour.
You know, our theme for the day. But you know, again, you know, energy is highly uncertain because all of this is happening in an atmosphere of rapid technological change. I mean, a few years ago, you know, New Hampshire, the U.S. was a net energy importer. Now the U.S. is a net energy exporter simply because of advances in technology. But a lot of that is bypassing New England simply because we can't get that energy in here. We don't have the infrastructure to do it.
And we've definitely talked about that on the show, how, as you said, we're kind of an island here in New England. On the other hand, Russ Thiebaud, gas prices are low nationally. That Washington Post article I quoted at the beginning of the show said the average American saving $700 a year because gas prices are lower. So why isn't that helping?
I think if you look at New Hampshire, it's much more than $700 a house per household because you have the heating costs, too, that you're saving. Fuel oil is also cheaper. And there was a study in Maine, I think it was $2,000 or $3,000. That's like a huge tax cut, and it should filter through the economy. People should be buying the couch that you mentioned, eating out more often. But I think people know that already. Energy prices, gasoline prices are inching back up.
It's volatile.
Yeah, I don't think we really buy that. We can count on that for the next 5 years.
Have to ask you, Jeff Feingold, about business taxes. And our caller, Guy, mentioned property taxes,
yes.
And that's difficult. That's a longstanding issue in New Hampshire. There's been a lot of talk, though, this year, Jeff, in the legislature about the need to lower business taxes. Without going into a huge amount of detail, just remind us of what that debate sounds like in the legislature
this year.
What's
going on is that the House has already voted to lower business taxes, and the Senate has come up with its version basically to cut the business profits tax over a period of time down about half a point, and the same thing with the business enterprise tax, to lower that. The argument is that by lowering the taxes, it might have this effect of spurring some kind of growth among, you know, business owners, giving them some more confidence that, you know, they with lower taxes, they could start businesses or expand their business.
Make
or
New
move
Hampshire
here.
Look more business friendly.
Yeah, but as Guy and Dennis and Russ have been saying, there are so many other factors besides the taxes that if you look at Guy as a businessman, his main concern is property taxes, and I think that would probably be true of a lot of business people, mm-hmm. because that's the tax that's really been completely going just crazy for as long as I've lived here, and it's like over 35 years. So you know, you have to look at that. That might be one aspect of it, but energy, I think, has been at the top of the agenda of businesses for many years. And actually, something else that we haven't talked about is healthcare costs are among the highest in the country in New Hampshire, and that also affects either the growth of business, the expansion of businesses, or even just the idea of, do I want to start a business in New Hampshire?
Let's take another call, gentlemen. And this is Dan in Mount Vernon. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment regarding the startup accelerator kind of programs and the general startup ecosystem in New Hampshire. I'm a co-founder of a small company in Southern New Hampshire, and we've benefited greatly from Alpha Loft, one of the accelerator programs here in New Hampshire, part of the education programs from Department of Resources and Economic Development. And I just would like to get some comments on how you see that benefiting the overall economy. I personally believe it's, you know, this sort of a grassroots approach to building the economy by creating brand new companies
here in New Hampshire, and there's been some recent developments there, and it's really looking encouraging. Again, I'm a beneficiary of this, but I think seeing more of this happening would really benefit the state's economy. I'd like to just get your comments on that.
Sure. So tell us a little bit more, Dan, if you could. So when you say more of this, you mean sort of that one-on-one, innovative, sitting down, making things happen.
Yeah, I think what I'm talking about is just new companies starting in New Hampshire. Again, you have very significant startup ecosystems and accelerator programs in Massachusetts and in other areas where you're seeing large amounts of economic growth. And it's sort of a grassroots approach to building the economy by creating new companies that then create new jobs as opposed to trying to attract existing companies.
Great.
And so I just would like to get the thoughts on that approach to building the state's economy.
Well, and Dan, it's good to hear from you since you are doing what a lot of people want others to do, which is start up a new company. Go ahead. Love your thoughts for us.
Historically, New Hampshire benefited from new firms, large firms, Digital Equipment, Apollo Computer, moving into the state
right.
in the 80s. That's gone. So I really hope to encourage more economic development, more job growth, I think does have to be sensitive to what Dan's talking about, which is homegrown. We can't compete. New Hampshire has chosen not to compete. Maybe we can't compete with states like South Carolina, Texas, North Carolina, that basically can offer you 10 years of tax-free. New York State's the same way. Very strong incentives that, in effect, undercut some of the benefits of bringing a large firm in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But for the longest time in the 1980s, maybe in the 70s, we could just sit back and passively wait for large firms to come in with hundreds, in some cases, 1,000 or more jobs. We can't do that anymore. We have to be more attuned to what Dan is talking about, homegrown, grow our own.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Dan. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I want to say what Dan's talking about are these accelerators, and we also call them incubators for high-tech companies. And Afflelof is a great example of that, and it's been very successful. There are also several others around the state, in Dartmouth, up in Plymouth, up in the Mount Washington Valley, and it's really a great thing that's been going on in the state.
Okay, well, lots more questions and comments from you. Your perspective on the New Hampshire economy, how is it going from your perspective? What might make it a little bit better? 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at economic indicators here in the Granite State, asking the broad question, how's the New Hampshire economy doing? We'd like to hear from you on that question. How would you answer that from your own perspective of your own household, your own business? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Dennis DeLay's here with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, Jeff Feingold with New Hampshire Business Review, and Russ Thibault, President of Applied Economic Research. By the way, we have some new reports from the Policy Center, Dennis's group, and from Jeff's publication, NHBR, on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Gentlemen, right back to our listeners. And here's a great email that just came in from Kayla and Eric, who call themselves hardworking New Hampshire 20-year-olds. Good morning, they say. We are two recent UNH graduates who love the seacoast. We tried to find jobs in the area, and when there weren't any, we were forced to expand our search to the greater Boston area. We are now commuting daily to Boston, and they say it's getting old fast. We will probably move away from the area we love for convenience. I think New Hampshire would benefit not by necessarily trying to compete with Massachusetts for the big businesses, but instead by finding a niche in hosting satellite offices for people like us who want to be part of a bigger company. Kayla and Eric, thank you so much for that email. And this is something, Dennis, that Russ touched on just before the break. We're not bringing in these giant companies anymore, so let's focus on the micro offices and the micro businesses.
Yeah, I think that's it's. I'll say one thing though: it's always difficult to pick winners and losers. You know, if you're trying to figure out where the next big thing is going to be. A decade ago, nobody would have picked Apple Computer to be one of the biggest companies in the high-tech world, maybe the biggest companies in the world. So it's difficult. I mean, I would say to Kayla and Eric, maybe one thing to do would be to talk to their employers and see if they'd be interested in setting up a satellite office in New Hampshire. And, you know, there would be a reduction in expenses for them and maybe some new business opportunities for those companies in Massachusetts.
Kayla and Eric, good to hear from you. And here's another person who emailed, didn't want their names used. As a 31-year-old member of the state, I find one of the hardest parts of housing in the state is the extreme burden of property taxes. Often the taxes for purchasing a home is as much as the mortgage itself. This coupled with a low job growth rate becomes very discouraging for the younger generations. And again, that's something that we talked about earlier. Real quick, Ross or Jeff? Yeah.
thank you, Jeff. Jeff was just nodding his head, anxious to get in also. I'll just say this. The housing market is tightening up in New Hampshire. We now have under a seven-month inventory, particularly in southern New Hampshire. Home prices are rising. And speaking anecdotally about two of my brother-in-laws that have been looking for a very vanilla house, three-bedroom ranch. They both have the wherewithal. They're both selling their former house. They're having a hard time, really hard time finding something. So this whole housing thing and the getting it back to property taxes is a problem for young households.
Yeah, that, I agree. And it, one of the other things about the housing market is because there still are a lot of people who are still, as Dennis report said before, underwater, they don't have an incentive to sell their house at this point.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that's one of the reasons why the inventory is low. And the other thing that I thought about this just the other day, in 1983 I bought my house. And in 1983 that was one of the great real estate depressions. And the interest rates were like 16, 17, 18%. And I got into some kind of first-time home buyers program, and I had the miracle of having an 11% rate. And people saying, how do you get such a low rate?
Yeah.
But the thing is that we got out of that recession with those kind of interest rates. But now we have historically low rates, mortgage rates that have never been lower. And we have this stagnant housing market for the most part. It's really kind of interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. And one other thing just to sort of say about that is that in this whole time period where we had this big run-up in housing prices and then a significant decline, about 30% depending upon what market you were looking at, rental prices never stopped increasing. And, you know, again, we had one caller that I think he's right, too, that a 12-bedroom a one-bedroom house on the seacoast maybe goes for about $1,200. That's about right. Yeah. That keys in pretty well with some of the things the Housing
and
Finance
also
Authority
just to bring up politics for a little bit, but this property tax discussion has not been happening for the last couple of cycles as much as it used to be.
No, they're focusing on business taxes.
Exactly.
Legislature.
It's very interesting.
Okay. Well, let's go back to our listeners. A lot of people who want to give us their thoughts on how the New Hampshire economy is going. And Rick is in Pembroke. Hi, Rick. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Fine.
I've been in construction for like almost 40 years. And I've seen the highs and the lows. The highs seem to be coming back, and at least in the renovation part of the business. Okay? New houses, I don't know. It's a young man's game. I'm a little too old for that these days. So,
but the renovations are going well. You're saying that's where things are picking up. Yeah,
incredibly. Yes, and. You know, a year ago, I was sitting home doing absolutely nothing. These days, the phone doesn't stop ringing. So.
Well, Rick, that's great to hear from you, and that's definitely what I see in my neighborhood. Not so much new houses being built, but a lot of houses being revamped, refurbished, under construction. Thanks for calling in. And let's go to Manchester next. Jonathan's on the air. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
There seems to be a generational divide between our legislature, which is all a lot of retired people and people can afford to be in the legislature, and the young people looking for work here. And it seems that they're cross purposes. I know a lot of people in the tech industry, both in New York and in Boston, and they talk about the problem with New Hampshire, and it is lack of infrastructure. There are very few buses that come up to the state daily. There's very few trains. In the past, that wasn't a problem because everybody tended to drive. Generationally, it's different. Bring talent up for the day to get people to go back and forth, even people who need jobs, like you're the letter from those two 20-year-olds on the coast. It's very interesting because it seems like both on the local level, and Manchester doesn't do itself any favors, and also the state doesn't do itself any favors for attracting businesses or being forward-thinking, is a real divide. And New Hampshire continues to run the problem of being a retirement state. Do young talent leave,
Old people come here to save their money, and there's no investment. And it's really, to me, it's such a tragedy. Even a town that is so like Manchester, I came here because of a poor town and has had a history of getting, you know, of trouble. But it's got such potential. Even the businesses, even the buildings here, it could be such a wonderful place if there was something going on.
Okay.
And right now, downtown Elm Street, empty, empty, empty storefronts because the rent rates are higher than the income rates around here. So downtown, again, is through this problem where Elm Street is becoming empty because people think, oh, this town should be worth money. But it isn't yet.
Well, Jonathan, let's talk about your point.
Infrastructure.
Yeah, looking at the legislature and maybe Jeff and Russ. Again, there's been a lot of talk in the legislature, Jeff, and you and I have talked about this on the news roundup on business taxes, lowering them. Yeah. Jonathan's saying he'd rather see infrastructure.
Well, that was
this is the big debate, isn't it?
That was one of the big arguments in terms of, you know, it's still going on and why, you know, in the motivation for lowering taxes at this point, because there is a need for a lot of investment in infrastructure. A lot of people see that in terms of our highways and bridges, you know, water systems, sewer systems, education, across the board. And that's something that actually a lot of business organizations support is doing this reinvestment in infrastructure. And I think to Jonathan's point, makes his point is that the legislature, the Senate and the House also did this. They basically said, we're not going to fund this study of rail, which is very strongly supported by the Nashua and Manchester Chambers of Commerce, because they see that it's really important to have a rail commuter rail line going from Manchester to Boston. And the legislature is saying no, but people like Jonathan are saying, well, this would help bring young people, but I don't think that message has gotten through to the legislature.
You know, I think the best example of a successful economic development program in New Hampshire, if you look at precedent, is PEASE, International Trade Port. There's like 10,000 jobs, and it's a partnership between the state and private investors. So it's infrastructure. When I first moved here 40 years ago or so, there were private investors that were building business parks in Salem and Hudson and Nashua. The risks are too high right now for the private sector to jump into that. And my bias as to economic development is that we need more of those partnership-type efforts that have proven to be successful. And we're just not getting them right now from the state. I think it's a mistake.
I do have to just say one thing. In defense of Manchester, Jonathan was mentioning how there's empty, empty storefronts everywhere. I've worked in Manchester since 1985. And in the late 80s, early 90s, those were empty storefronts.
You want empty? Storefront.
No, seriously.
Go back 20 years.
No, it's not as robust as it could be downtown Manchester. But in terms of the vitality down there, it's a world of difference from the early 90s.
Well, it's more of a nightlife there now,
yes,
right,
Yes, there's
Jeff?
A lot of restaurants. You have the Verizon Center, the Fisher Cats. The Mill Yard is just an amazing story. It's almost second. It's second to Pease in terms of a development story.
That's
really
another example of infrastructure improvements. Redoing Elm Street, getting the Verizon Center in, the ballpark. These are all public-private ventures, and they've been successful. So I think that's the path we should be moving on.
All right. Well, Jonathan, it's great to hear from you. And let's go to Chris next in Enfield. Hi, Chris. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead, Chris.
I might actually be familiar with a couple of the panelists, and I apologize I wasn't listening earlier when I just had something to let me know you guys were on. We've recently relocated our headquarters from New York City. We're a consulting firm. To Manchester, partially because of the availability of some of our existing staff. But the reason we chose Manchester over some other cities and what's really important to us going forward are two things. One is infrastructure, and two is the community. I'll just say broadly, but it's more specifically the community of businesses, restaurants, and other things that cater to a young professional crowd. And we see Manchester really coming up that way, and a lot of possibility for the future, and it was a huge factor in us relocating. So we're now in the process of opening our first office, and we're going to be hiring in some new students from St. Anselm and UNH and possibly Dartmouth in the future, fresh college graduates, and we're hoping that we can be part of this groundswell growing the Manchester community as far as a place that young professionals want to stay and live. And a huge thing for us going forward is going to be the continued investment of the state in Manchester, infrastructure, and other businesses coming in and growing that community and making it an attractive place for those people to stay and live and work going forward.
Wow, Chris, it's great to hear from you. So your business relocated from New York City to Manchester. Welcome to the Granite State, by the way. But you live in Enfield, is that right?
Yes, I do. So part of the reason, as I mentioned earlier, that we opted to move here was, you know, we have a couple of different city options around, and we needed a physical office presence to support our growth, which has been pretty strong over the past few years. And we need to bring in new people out of college that we can train, you know, as opposed to hiring experienced professionals that can telecommute in our industry. And so, you know, in trying to find a place for that physical office presence, we considered other places like Burlington, Vermont, for example. And just the culture of the Manchester area and what we see is the possibility, especially, you know, given continued investment in infrastructure and what we're seeing from and hearing from the state and the business, the economic development people in Manchester and in New Hampshire, was a really positive thing for us. And we see there being a lot of possibility going forward, and we really want to be part of a community that's growing and attractive, again, to young professionals. And we saw that best opportunity in Manchester going forward, and we hope that the state continues to support that.
Well, if the Manchester Chamber folks are listening, they're probably cheering in their offices.
They're probably
right
giving
now.
You a call right
yeah.
now.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in. Here's an email that came in from Sean in Littleton, guys, and this gets to what we were talking about before, that people do have jobs, wages are perhaps inching up some, 3.8% unemployment here in New Hampshire, and yet people are still feeling anxious and maybe not buying that couch that we keep coming back to, or the new carpet or whatever. This is from Sean in Littleton. He says, my wife and I are in our mid-40s, both work full-time, two kids, one in high school, one in grade school. Sean says, we expect college costs for our two kids to total in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000. And we do not want our children saddled with excessive college debt. Therefore, Sean says, all of our discretionary income for the next 12 years, when our youngest son will likely graduate, is being saved for college tuition. Sean says, we would like to buy a new car, build an addition onto our home, buy a few toys, bicycles, etc. But there is not enough in the budget for anything other than the necessities and college. My point is, Sean says, that at least for us, the costs of college reduce our consumer spending in other areas which could benefit the economy. Wow, this is a powerful email.
I mean,
Dennis,
we could do a whole show on college costs, mm-hmm. and frankly, I think that college has to some extent been oversold in terms of, you know, your own personal career development and, you know, the kind of job that you can get in the future. The unfortunate thing is you know, as an economist, I can understand why college is in such demand and therefore why it costs so much. It's something economists call signaling. In other words, take Chris in Enfield. You know, he's hiring people from St. Anselm's and from UNH Manchester, I think he said, and maybe from Hanover. Well, he's hiring college graduates. Why? Because a college graduate is somebody who's proven that they can stick to something for 4 years, that they can do a project on their own, and they can get it done successfully, and that's an important signal to employers, and I don't see that changing in the future unless we come up with some other way for employers to judge how a new employee is going to do in their business. The ticket to get in, you know, rightly or wrongly, is a college education.
It's really interesting. So, Jeff, maybe I'll turn to you. So here's Sean and saying, yeah, I'd like to help the economy out and help himself out, build an addition, buy a new bicycle, which would provide that, again, that economic boost that we've been talking about. But he and his wife are socking it all away for
college.
I know,
and if you multiply that by thousands and
family
thousands,
family by family,
that's one of the reasons we're sitting around this table right now. It's a real weight on the economy, not just in New Hampshire, but nationally.
Well, the alternative for Sean is to borrow all that money now, then have no retirement.
And there's
left,
a lot of
right?
there are a lot of people in this state that feel his pain. They understand. They're going through the same thing right now.
Well, it's interesting because we've talked a lot about the cost of college in terms of the young person. And the debt that they accrue and, you know, how they have to kind of hold back when they get out. But here's Sean saying it's having an impact right now.
And I think even after his kids get out of school, there'll probably be a transitional time when he and his wife will be helping them out financially. They may move back in.
That's right.
The boomerang effect.
Are you speaking from experience?
I am definitely speaking from experience, Laura.
It never ends.
It just keeps going and going. But this whole intergenerational kind of thing where boomers are taking care of their parents, taking care of their kids, and then can't afford to buy a couch for themselves.
All right. Or the bicycle.
Or the bicycle, right.
Well, guys, this has been great. And great to hear from so many people and their own perspectives on the economy. Let's get together and talk about this again, because this was good. Jeff Feingold, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me, Laura.
Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. Dennis DeLay, good to see you.
Oh, great being here, Laura. Thank you very much.
Dennis DeLay, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, New Hampshire forecast manager for the New England Economic Partnership. Russ Tebow, good to have you. Thank you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic consulting firm in Laconia. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search iTunes for NHPR Exchange.